Welcome back to Community in Code. I'm Chris Reynolds, and my guest this week is Jonathan Wald. If you've been in WordPress for any length of time, you might have run into him. He co-founded Gildenburg. He spent time at Automattic. He's over at Convessio now, and he co-hosts a podcast called Crossword. And I want to be absolutely clear, he has an extremely unfair radio voice, one that puts me to shame, and I'm super jealous. We talk about his years in the WordPress community, the .org forums, whether WordPress is still the operating system of the web. Jonathan's been pulling on that thread for a long time, and he's got a take on it that has almost nothing to do with the software. But the fun part of the conversation is our hard left into homeschooling. Both of us have homeschooled, him as a kid, me as a parent. And Jonathan reckons that never being sorted into a social hierarchy is the reason it doesn't occur to him to ask permission for things. He just does them. Which is something that I've definitely seen from homeschooled kids, a level of confidence that at times can border on audacity. Sometimes that gets him into trouble, but mostly it doesn't. There's also encyclopedias, philosophy class, and some very strong opinions about the sun and Phoenix. Let's get into it. Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast where we talk to the human beings behind the commits. And my human being that I'm with today is Jonathan Wald, a longtime WordPresser. You co-founded a consultancy a few years ago called Gildenburg, doing that for a lot in WooCommerce and stuff like that. Welcome to the show, Jonathan, and tell us about yourself.
Chris, it's a pleasure to be here. Tell us about yourself. That's a pretty open-ended invitation. Yeah. I'm still having fun in this ecosystem after all these years. WordCamp US is coming up in just a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to get a suntan and experience some heat. That'll be a good time. I think for me, technology has been a part of my world since I was a teenager growing up. Like, the internet brought me community and an opportunity to connect with folks around the world. And I think it's just become this very natural segue. WordPress came into the radar for me about 20 years ago. And what initially drew me into it was the experience that I had with the community at the time, which was mostly on the .org forums, right? We weren't doing WordCamps or any of that just yet. But I remember, like, I came for the tech, and it was helping me solve a problem I had at the time, which was getting a blog to be integrated into the types of sites that I was working on. But it was the helpfulness of the folks who helped me figure out how to accomplish what I was trying to. That I'm like, oh, this is cool. This is actually something I'd like to contribute back to. And the rest became quite the history.
Yeah, that's actually so. It's funny that you mentioned that. If you go back to the very first post on this site, I talk about sort of the origin of how I kind of came up with the idea for the show. Yeah. And it was sort of two things. One of them was just PressConf, because PressConf, like, the conversations at PressConf were very much the sort of conversations that I wanted to be having. Yeah. But before PressConf, a few weeks before that, I had gone to my first DrupalCon. And at DrupalCon, there was a sticker that was in a big rack of stickers that were free that said, come for the code, stay for the community.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it was I'd never heard it articulated that way. That particular phrasing, I think, is a thing in the Drupal community, but the sentiment was something that I very much identified with. And I thought it was really interesting that I could go to a Drupal conference and find the thing that I have felt for 20 years in the WordPress community reflected in a sticker that the Drupal community, like, and rallied around this idea that the Drupal community already sort of, like, held internal in themselves. And so putting the two things together is like, I want to have conversations where we talk about this, like, this thing, whatever this is. Like, we're here, we do the code, but, like, it's the community, it's the people, it's that's the thing that that really keeps us in this ecosystem.
It's interesting to me to see the impact that the events have had. Like, I was a late arrival to the event scene. Mm-hmm. I went to WordCamp Long Beach, was my first WordCamp, and it was my first WordCamp, and I was also a speaker. So I'd done some meetups. I had some like event experience, but you know, working asynchronously, the internet allows you to work with people all over the world. I think I'd met a few folks from the WordPress space prior to the WordCamp experience, but it was pretty limited. And then after experiencing that and then starting to go to some of the bigger ones, WordCamp Europe in Vienna was my first like big one. Mm-hmm. And it left quite the impression on me and continues to do so, even as like my like reasons for going will shift or the focus will change. There's still something precious to me about it's always great to see folks that you already know, right? Like yeah. That's a highlight. Yeah. There's something though about, you know, meeting folks that you just would never have had context to meet otherwise, except for this community space that you share together and then showing up around the world. It's something, I know it's not unique to WordPress as you've experienced in the case with Drupal there, and I'm sure other open source communities, but it's something that, it's been a real highlight for me over the course of my years in this space.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you mentioned, because I was actually going to say that I recently learned that WordCamp Long Beach was the first time that you spoke. And now I've learned that WordCamp Long Beach was your first actual WordCamp. I was at that WordCamp. I also was speaking at that WordCamp. And I went to your talk, and I remember your talk. Because you were talking about, I believe, WordPress as the operating system of the web. Yeah. And I remember, like, that was sort of a topic at the time that was getting a little bit of, like conversation around it. Like, it's kind of this abstract idea. But I remember a friend of mine who I worked with at WebDev, Rami Abraham, had made a YouTube video, which doesn't exist anymore, and I'm so sad, because he had done a couple YouTube videos that were showing like the future of WordPress, and it had like all this After Effects, and it was like a VR heads up display of like the WordPress admin and stuff, and I was like yeah, and like hand controls to move things around. Wow. And yeah, and I was like, yeah, that's silly, but also like it's fun to sort of like see that sort of like sci-fi applied to like this thing that we're building, and think about like, maybe the thing that we're building could do that thing. Maybe the thing that we're building could power, I don't know, a rocket ship or something. I don't know. Probably has more memory than the, or uses more memory than the rocket from the Apollo 8. But like sort of transposing that onto like, you know, now I think about like have your thoughts about WordPress being the operating system of the web, have you thought about it in those terms since that WordCamp, or like how has WordPress sort of adapted or not adapted to that idea, do you think?
For a bit of context for those who may not be familiar with the idea, I first came across it in some of Matt Mullenweg's writings and some of the conversations. Like he dropped the thread.
Yeah.
And then I think for me, my initial work was just pulling that thread. One of my first conversations with Matt was on this topic, and I wanted to like pick his brain further. Like, hey, do you think that this is still relevant? And so my thinking has evolved on it. I think what always drew me to it is that, like, if you had the conversation with someone more technical, they'd be quick to point out, well, this isn't an operating system in the technical sense. And I'm like, well, that was never my contention.
Yeah.
But like for me, the starting point, I've written a couple of pieces about this over the years. The starting point was this idea of like, well, what is an operating system and what are the parts and pieces of it? And an ecosystem around it was always a key component of the conversation for me. And, I think just what clicked for me in that process was like, I can already see how people are using WordPress far beyond blogging. Like to me, this idea of it's empowering all this creativity, all this new capability that just wasn't there before. And many folks are using WordPress, myself included, especially back then at the time, with some of the projects I was working on, far beyond the scope of anything I imagined, at least it was publicly documented about how you might use something like this.
Yeah.
Especially with like WooCommerce being a great illustration of kind of where that's grown and become or evolved. I think what remains highly relevant to me, Chris, about the topic is less about the technical. Like one of the more exciting things over the past couple of months, or in the past year or so, was the there was a couple of folks, a gentleman in particular, I'm forgetting his name, who worked on a concept of like WordPress in like a windowed mode, like desktop version of it.
Yeah.
That got me pretty excited because it brought back a lot of those ideas. But what remains the draw to me is the ecosystem around WordPress. That to me, even it's much less about the software. And I think that there's a fairly big open question mark right now about where WordPress is going to evolve from a technical perspective. I think, you know, folks making decisions still have that like operating system like thinking as a part of the overall vision of how do we set up WordPress with these primitives, these foundational pieces so that others can build on top of it. And what holds my interest to this day just remains the size, the shape of the ecosystem around WordPress, which to me, it has so much latent energy in it that can be harnessed. And I think that's what makes operating systems interesting. If you think about when we think of a traditional operating system these days, there's lots that technically exist, but only a few that tend to be interesting to folks. And it's because of the ecosystems around them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. Like you think about like particularly in like the Linux community, the Linux distributions that get the most traction tend to be the ones that have the most active and vibrant communities around them.
Yes.
Definitely when I was playing with Linux, I was leaning towards Ubuntu, and then like okay, then I found Mint, and like there's really like through what other people were doing and how they were doing it, and like the approach, because like you know every sort of flavor of Linux has a sort of a different philosophy, and like which one, it's like a choose your own adventure kind of, you know. And WordPress and Drupal for that matter also have that sort of like choose your own adventure-ness of it, because like really it's just a framework to put stuff into.
Yeah. Plugins are a great illustration of that in the WordPress context, right? The plugins that you choose and the adventure that those plugins take you on can open up all sorts of paths and possibilities. And of course, you can build your own stuff. And with AI in particular these days, we're in an interesting moment. It's hard. One of the things I've always enjoyed, Chris, about like the WordPress ecosystems and ecosystem thinking in general is that you can't really like... We don't have enough attention or bandwidth like in our human brains to be able to like hold the whole thing. So you can do work to understand the size and shape and get a sense of things. Like I've always been drawn to this idea of like mapping ecosystems and creating maps. And maps are great examples of human-centric interfaces that have like just a lot of density in it. It's not about the literal accuracy, even though that matters. It's like you're not going, you choose a level of detail that's practically useful for the human that's using the map. And as I think about the WordPress ecosystem, that's a tricky thing. Like it's so vast. There's so many parts and pieces. It's hard to understand how the impact of the decisions that are being made today are going to, what ramifications that they're going to have. And I still find all that really interesting and relevant. And I'm really curious to see where this little thing that we call WordPress goes, and also the impact to projects around it, right? Like the Drupal project remains relevant. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see how it's carved a niche of its own over the years. And it's all quite interesting.
Yeah. One of the questions I always ask everyone is sort of what got you into tech and what sort of brought you into whatever thing that you're doing. What is the thing that when did you start getting interested in technology broadly, and what was exciting to you then?
So I had a I guess an advantage or disadvantage depending on how you look at it, in that I was homeschooled. all the way up through through like end of high school.
Okay.
And that gave me the opportunity to just experience technology at a young age. We had a computer. My first computer was an Apple II GS. I learned basic programming on it and loved it. Like just being able to go through and, you know, work on something and be able to see the cause and effect and like change lines. Like I wouldn't really understand everything, but I could see how I could change a line in the code and see what the impact of that would be.
Yeah.
Like in the output. And that just, yeah, I think from a young age, I had a curiosity about technology and was just really drawn to what it opened up for me. It gave me an opportunity to connect with folks with shared interests around the world. One of my first communities that I was a part of was a homeschooling like forum where I met with like other homeschoolers and then I think it's been a pretty natural progression as a early or late teenager. Like as I started to look at what my career options were, I wasn't thinking about technology as a career. I was thinking about like, I'm going to get into real estate and investing and sort of all these things. And I did a couple of internships. And the thing that was useful in all of those is that they were seeing me as a techie, like a technologist. I was a young guy who was comfortable with tech and I was curious. And suddenly I ended up in situations where like, I'm like, oh, wow, I'm like, I landed this project over here. I'm building a site for these guys over here and just kind of following wherever that led. And that's what ultimately put me in a situation where I was building a site and they wanted this thing called blogging. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, let me go figure that out. And I came across WordPress. I'd been on Blogger for a bit and I knew that that wasn't going to work for what they wanted. And then that brought me into that community experience. But I think as a whole, technology has just always been interesting for what it's enabled. And the I think as a young person, like I just had the internet just provided so much access to learning, to context, to relationships, to resources. And that's even though the internet has changed quite a bit over the years, just the core value proposition has remained. And I found technology to just be really useful and something that I still enjoy learning about new things.
I'm going to segue because I have a vested interest in hearing about your homeschool story because we homeschooled our kids. I feel like one of the things, especially like family who come up through the traditional school system, like the question that we always get is like, well, what about this and what about that? And what are their, you know, what kind of jobs or colleges are they going to go to? Or like, are they missing out on? There's this assumption that because you're not going through the traditional school system, that there is a deficit. And I'm interested in hearing about your experience, but also like what sort of, if you maybe can talk about it, or no, like what was the sort of thought process that your parents had in choosing to homeschool rather than putting you through the normal academic system?
Yeah, it's a fun topic for a mix of reasons. So my wife today is an educator, has taught for 10 years, and she took a couple years back. She took a couple years off and is actually going back to school in the fall. So we talk about this a lot. And for the past couple of years, she's been educating our now 9-year-old. So for my parents, so my father passed when I was quite young, and which made it even more interesting, the decision that my mom made to homeschool us. I was the oldest of three brothers, and she homeschooled us up through high school. And in high school, we were living in California at the time. We enrolled in a charter school program, which provided us with a teacher who'd visit on like a monthly basis and also gave us resources. So we got computers through the school system, which was a big deal for us. That opened up a whole bunch of new possibilities. And then we started junior college in the last couple of years of high school, which was a really positive experience. I had that question going into it. How am I going to do in this like setting?
Yeah. Yeah.
And suddenly my brother and I was 17, he was 15 at the time. We're in junior college classes together and we did really well. And that answered a lot of the questions in my mind of like, and it wasn't so much all that we knew. It was our the curiosity that had been cultivated through that homeschool experience. Like, I remember reading encyclopedias for fun. it probably helped that mom wasn't a fan of us watching much TV, so we'd get bored, and that, like, all right, I got all these encyclopedias here, might as well dig in. But going into a school setting and doing junior college when we did, I just found it interesting and found that, yeah, we can apply ourselves, we can do well in this. The social thing is interesting. There's always benefits and trade-offs, whatever the choices you make, right? Mm-hmm. The benefit of a homeschool experience is the ability to curate and refine what you're doing around interests. And there's so many great resources available today. My mom, especially as we got older, she put more of her energy into working as a single mother to provide for us. So she was less involved in our direct education. Mm-hmm. And there was one might argue, like, too much freedom that we had. But it's what facilitated so much of the time that we spent online, like learning things. And my brother took up graphic design out of interest, mm-hmm. and just put a ton of effort into learning how to use Illustrator and sort of do all this stuff. And I took an interest in communities. And I think there's, with anything, there are benefits and trade-offs. I found that, like, the concerns that folks had about, like, oh, you're not going to be, like, socialized in a homeschool setting. The only thing that I really struggled with in retrospect is I had a harder time relating to my own age group growing up.
Yeah.
I'd spend more time talking with adults, mm-hmm. or folks that were younger, but my own age was just kind of, I found it harder to relate. And that's something that stuck with me for, I think, a good amount of time into my early adulthood. But
there's so many little nuggets in your story that, like, I see and identify with, like, the idea of reading for fun, or reading, like, being is having a special interest, essentially, in a particular, like, thing that is, like, not just, like, reading encyclopedias for fun, but also relating to and interacting with adults more easily than people of your own peer group, and, like, having a sort of a weird, I don't want to say distance, but, like, there's a thing there, like, especially when sort of re-entering, like, normal society or whatever, right? Because so my son, we homeschooled all throughout high school, and gave him a graduation. And then my daughter, we did 1 year of high school, and then they went to an actual high school. So they joined as a ninth grader, even though they had, like, 1 year of homeschooled high school. So they're a year older.
Yep.
Yeah. And we did that partially because we wanted to be a little bit tentative about that transition. My son had gone to a couple years of a charter school before we pulled him out.
Yep.
And my daughter had been through, like, a semester of, like, kindergarten, and we pulled them out at the same time. But at the time, what we saw with my daughter in particular was, like, she had this, like, very vibrant personality that the longer she was in class, the more that got dimmed.
Interesting.
And we're like, we do not want to dim this light. Like, we want them to feel, to be their whole person, right?
Yeah.
And I think that has worked. Like, I think I do feel like they are way more independent. They are way more know what they want and know what they like. And so when they did go into school again, it was an adaptation of, like, learning the system and how to operate in the system, but with all of this sort of, like, side experience and knowledge that put them on a maturity level that was, like, way past, like, more so than even, like, the year age difference, but, like, they were far, more, because they had done things themselves. They had had the creativity and the freedom to explore their own interests and whatever, that's a very homeschooly thing.
It is. It's interesting to see, because again, I think these days much more in terms of like benefits and trade-offs, right? Like there's definitely benefits to more traditional school experiences. And I'm learning too, a lot of it does come down to the nature of the child as well. Like I was pretty adamant about homeschooling initially, but my 16-year, he's now 16, as a, you know, 5 and 6 year old, he just did so well going into a, like he, you know, went to school from the outset, and he was so social, and he thrived in a school environment. It was a smaller school. We had a great teacher, and the teacher is really what made all the difference for me. This is just a great educator, and now being married to an educator who also homeschools. Our 9-year-old will actually be going into the 6th grade classroom with her, that she'll be teaching, because he's well advanced in the majority of the subjects. I think for me, it was interesting to see, it was interesting to see the things that would probably have been, like, for better or for worse, like refined out of me in a school setting that didn't, like going into adulthood. Right. Because you don't, I think one of the things that you get in a school setting is for better or for worse, there's a lot of like peer feedback and like things that, that get quashed or encouraged based on like the dynamics and like where you are in the sort of social hierarchy. You don't get any of that in homeschool. And I think in my case, there's a lot of things that I've noticed about me going into adulthood and into my career where it doesn't occur to me to not ask questions of something or to just to challenge the status quo or to, like, you know, feel a I don't feel a need to ask for permission around just many things where it's like, oh, well, I remember, like, even this whole like operating system thing, I remember seeing Matt write about it or talk about it, and then it was interesting to me, and I, in the first conversation, I went to him like looking for answers and more input on it, and then he gave me some great feedback, and I saw that, like, he was focused on other things and he was focused more on like WordPress as a product. And I was like, oh, well, I could run with this. Like, I could take this idea further and let's see where we take it. And I just did. And, and I'm like, well, I'll talk about it. And, I'll see if this is, if anyone else finds this interesting. And it didn't occur to me to not, and that gets me into trouble occasionally, but I do see that as, something that could have been like quashed or discouraged in a, in like a more traditional school setting. Again, it really comes down to the teachers, because great teachers also recognize those moments and bring it out of kids and encourage it. I'm also really grateful for the several years of the charter school teacher who came out to visit us. She had a huge impact because she saw like my writing potential, for instance, and she held me to a higher standard where she's like, hey, Jonathan, I know that you're capable of more that I'm seeing you put in effort wise, even though you're not motivated in this area. So she's like, I want you to get into poetry. I want you to submit for a contest over here. I want you to, put some more effort in this thing over here. And I did, and continue to reap the rewards to this day for the effort that I invested then.
It's so fun and cool to talk about. Like, I think there's so much like, I think that it definitely does depend on the school and the educators and the experience, but so much, like, especially when we were talking about pulling our kids out, there was a lot of discussion, and this is 15 years ago or something. But there was a lot of discussion, like in TED Talks and stuff, about like the school industrial system as it existed.
Yes.
And the idea that it came out of the Industrial Revolution to just basically fabricate a bunch of worker cogs that like are in the machine and then continue operating in the machine of commerce. And, you know, when you're doing that, then you're trying to get these identical little cogs so that they operate in the system that is going
to be. You want that uniformity.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, obviously people are different. And particularly, like, you know, my partner and I are are both very creative. We went to a school, like we met at a school that like was very sort of countercultural and let us create our own major. And that was the reason why we went there. And so like we obviously already had these ideas of like, well, there's other things that aren't just this like, and like, it's funny because like the thing that I tell about my college experience is like, yeah, I got a degree, but what I actually learned was how to bullshit. And that's like actually the most valuable skill that I got, because part of the process that we did in our to get our degrees, we didn't do grades. We did each student would do a self-evaluation, and their teacher, their faculty advisor would do a written evaluation, and the faculty evaluation is what would go on your file. And then you'd get a pass fail, but they'd have an evaluation, which means that you would actually hear about what you did well, what you didn't do well, and it would be in response to your self-evaluation, what you felt like you were working on.
That's cool.
And then at the end, you had to do essentially defend why your major should exist, like what it is and what you did and like what all the pieces are. And you had a couple faculty, like your faculty advisor would be there and talk about, you know, what you did and whatever. But it was sort of like a statement of purpose, kind of like, and also like in front of like a panel, to be like, and like obviously it's a little bit ceremonial, like they're not very many people are going to say, yeah, no, you're bad, but like it really was like, can I put all these ideas together? And for me, like, yeah, the reason why I say bullshit is because like, it, can I bullshit my way out of this? Can I put all these things together and make it sound good enough that I'm able to defend the thing? And honestly, like being able to defend your ideas is a thing that is the single most transferable skill that I've pulled. It doesn't matter the classes that I took.
And, like, and to do it honestly and in a way that like you can be satisfied with, that you're not just like pushing your way through where it's like, I've done the work. And even if I'm making stuff out of thin air, it's like you can have a confidence in it that I'm like, this feels good to me.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something there. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I went last year actually and re-enrolled in college. I'm working towards I started out I'm like working towards an MBA.
Okay.
And
you get very philosophy major vibes.
Well, here's what's interesting. I actually took a philosophy course last quarter and thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's making me think that I might try to go more down like an interdisciplinary like route to actually finish. But the reason why I started is that I had noticed just gaps in my so much of what I've done has been based on just experience and trying to figure things out. So I took several quarters of accounting. I did business law. And it's been getting back into like college level mathematics. It's been invaluable for me and just further anchors how much I like learning. What's been interesting about it, Chris, I think a lot about like designing around constraints, especially as humans with our limited capacity and attention. And even though all of that information is technically just available to you online, like I didn't have to go to a college course to learn accounting, but it was a forcing function, and I actually learned accounting over the course of it. Like the formality, the ceremony, the process of enrolling, having an educator on the other side of it. This day and age, what made it possible was the fact that even though it was my local college, it was asynchronous. So I was able to do all but the testing like remotely. And I found it to be like counterintuitively just a great move. Now, at this stage in my life, the social component, just somewhat sadly, I guess, was just not interesting or relevant or even practical because I'm working, I've got a family. I love education, I love learning new things, and it ended up being a bit of a goldmine for me of just stepping into a more structured, formal process. And it's hard too, because I also want to do well with it. So there are a few times where I'm like, oh, this is a little insane. I can't believe I'm doing all this right now. But I've been thoroughly enjoying it and continuing to do so.
Yeah. Talk about Guildenburg for a little bit. Like what is the story of Guildenburg? How did that form and what actually were you doing when you were doing it? I mean, I know what you were doing a little bit,
This is super interesting. So coming out of my time at Automattic, I wanted to focus on the broader WordPress ecosystem, and I had an initial vision, which I wrote about quite publicly And then I started working with a few folks to like build out some of these ideas where it's like, how can we do conscious, proactive work to grow the WordPress ecosystem? Like, what does it look like? And I had a lot of big ideas in my head at the time. Where things became like quite practical, I had a couple of folks I was working with initially. And then I met Tammy Lister in the process. And, you know, I had some initial things that we tried with Guildenberg, some success, a lot of things just like I found this is what that I guess the willingness to just go in and try things, or maybe the confidence slash hubris at times. Well, like, hey, I'm going to just try this big thing. And then, oh, wow, that did not work as I expected. But you learn a lot from it. And there were some things that remained interesting. And I saw an opportunity to say, okay, even if the idea of building out, because we were looking at like building a platform and like all this like infrastructure, I was like, well, that's not really, it's not going the way that I expected to, yet there's still a lot of value to be provided here in just connecting the dots between folks and opportunities. And when I met Tammy and she came on board eventually as a co-founder along with Luke Carbis, the focus shifted. Like, she really opened my eyes to a lot of gaps in product thinking that, yeah, like it's, you can become pretty dangerous when you're curious and interested in learning things, and you can go into something like, oh, I now understand this, right? I know this thing, but that doesn't mean you understand it.
Sure.
And, in my work with Tammy, yeah, it opened my eyes to a lot of things that I just didn't actually know that much about, and the opportunities that I saw in, and that we saw together in combining like product thinking with more of like this business development thinking. And we saw the real world impact that we were able to have with the members of the guild that we were working with, and just getting folks connected with each other. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And what ended up happening, this was near the end of last year. I knew some big changes were coming up. My wife and I were, she was pregnant. We knew we were going to have a baby. And Guildenberg had gotten to a point where we were actually quite happy with its growth trajectory. And Tammy and I were starting to shift our focus to putting more energy and investment into the product side of things, which is always what we've been interested in. And one of our members, Convesio, we'd had the privilege of a front row seat to all of their growth. We'd been working actively with them for over a year and saw some of the areas that they were focused on. We'd helped them with some acquisitions. And that just prompted thinking on our part where it's like, well, I wonder what if we were to work with them more directly and just become a part of the team. And we ended up deciding to do that in pretty short order, where it meant that Tammy was able to step into a role as chief product officer, where there was entire like product teams, and she could just jump into that and do that thing full time that we were trying to earn our way into doing just a little bit, because consulting work was the majority of what we were doing. And for me, it meant that I could focus business development energy on one company, rather than spread, I was basically doing fractional business development work for just a bunch of different companies in the space, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It was also something where, knowing that I was about to have a baby, that I was also going back to college and going through all these other transitions, there was like a sanity check for me at one point where it's like, this feels a lot more sane to focus my energy and efforts on one company that's doing really interesting things in the space. And so that's what we've done. And I've been super happy with it. And it's only picked up the pace since then. With Guildenberg as a whole, though, I'm really grateful for the time and experience. And it gave me a chance to test in practice a lot of the ideas that I'd had prior and see. And just, and also, I think the thing that remains the highlight for me, It's fantastic to be able to make a grounded connection where it's like you see an alignment of interest between two products or two organizations and then like help them find that aligned interest and then kind of just get out of the way and get to see some cool things happen as a result of that. That remains the highlight for me. It's fantastic. It's like the people that we got to work with through the process and still get to, like, a lot of what drew me to the opportunity at Convesio was to see the work that they were doing, outside of the hosting space, which is where they started, and focusing on commerce and payments and sort of all of that. So it's been quite the ride. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think that networking component is really interesting. Like the part of it that I sort of saw was a lot of like, hey, we know all these people, and we're just kind of here to like connect this dot over here to this dot over here. Yeah. And like, you two go, you should have a conversation. And it's very much like, I think about like Courtney Robertson, like what she does, like the skill that she has, which is partially her job as a developer advocate. I think that's still her title at GoDaddy, but really is more about who she is as a person and a member of the WordPress community, is like knowing the people and then knowing who to like which strings to pull and, and tie together and say, okay, you two go in a room and talk about this, and you two need to talk about this, and like kind of like almost like air traffic control sort of thing.
Yeah, that's an important part of it. And I think the experience with Tammy also taught me where it's not, well, it's often not enough if you're thinking long term to just like see an alignment of interest or make the connection. What I saw work incredibly well is like when Tammy would look at things through a product lens, and we would look at this through the lens of like, well, is there product level alignment between these two organizations? That gave a clear path for them to actually get something done.
Yeah.
Because that was often the challenge, where it's like two parties or more would see like, oh, there is an opportunity here. What do we do about it?
Right.
And for me, like, I think I knew intuitively, but it's taken a while to learn. It's like, you can't just make something happen. You have to, the work is to find where the alignment of interest is. Sometimes it's unobvious. And I think looking at things through a product lens, just led to a lot more practical, like, okay, here's a thing that you guys can actually do, and here's the place to start. And, I think that's a bit a lot, and that's led to me thinking even more holistically since then, where it's like, it's not just that you find the commercial alignment. Sometimes it's like also about cultural alignment between two organizations and how they're working. And I think within the vein of like, and where we started with this like operating system and ecosystem thinking, what I especially enjoyed about it and remains, I think, the key interest for me is the opportunity that any of us have to shape an ecosystem through making these informed connections and through like seeing an opportunity. And it's like some of the best things that I got to work on over the past couple of years were when someone would seemingly out of the blue who knew what I was like trying to do is like, hey, you should talk to so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And then that just opened up a big opportunity that wouldn't have been on my radar at all. And I've thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah. So you mentioned WordCamp US. I assume that you're going. Yes. Yeah.
I'm going.
That. Yeah. And, what are you looking forward to in Phoenix?
So Tammy and I are going to be doing a talk together. Awesome. This will be our first time sharing the stage, which I'm pretty excited about. I'm a little bit nervous. I'm going to have to up my game. Looking
Tammy's
forward.
Tammy's tough competition.
She is. Looking forward to the folks that, you know, it's great to see folks that we already know, yourself included, and meeting new folks experiencing the heat. I can't wait.
Have you not experienced the Phoenix summer before?
Oh, I have actually. My grandfather had a lawn care business, and I've been in Phoenix in the summer.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, like, I've definitely been through Arizona a few times in the middle of summer. And also Utah is not too far off, although we don't get quite as hot. But the thing that I say, like, when I went to PressConf this last time and I was in the cab, and it had been hot. It was like 90 degrees, I think, when I landed. And that was rare for what, March, I think it was. So that was uncommon. But we were talking about the heat, and I'm like, yeah, I know, because I've been here, that like the thing that I think about when I'm in Arizona in the peak of summer is that it feels like the sun is actively trying to kill me. Like, it's not like anywhere
else.
Let's
bake Chris. Let's bake him.
It's anywhere else. It's like, oh, it's hot, but like, no, it's actually like actively painful, like to spend an extended period of time. But then, you know, you just don't do that. Is what you learn.
even though it's a bit of a joke, it is also serious that they take air conditioning seriously.
Yeah. Phoenix, well, so. You would have to,
you,
right?
You have
yeah.
to. If yeah. it's going to be a bit habitable. Yes. I'm looking yeah. forward to it though.
Yeah, no, I'm down. I'm looking forward to it as well. It'll be my first flagship WordCamp that I'll be speaking at. So I'm pretty excited about that. And yeah, looking forward to reconnecting with all the folks, because yeah, that's what it's about.
That is what it's about.
Well, thank you, Jonathan, for coming on. Thank you all who may or be listening to this now or in the future. Where can people find you online should they desire to?
Yeah, jonathanwold.com is my personal website. I've been having more fun working on it lately. I've got a blog that is not seen some love in a while, but it's on my mind. And my contact information is all there. And I'm also like on the WordPress Slack. And yeah.
You also have a podcast. Wherever. You have you oh, use yeah. this amazing radio voice, this relaxing, soothing radio voice for the powers of good with your podcast.
Mostly for good. Yes, I actually have a couple of podcasts, but the one that's yes. Yeah, so I have Crossword, which is a podcast I do with Luke Carbis on the WordPress ecosystem, and occasionally we have some. We always have fun, and occasionally we have some good output from that as well.
Only occasionally.
Only occasionally.
Well, thanks again, Jonathan, for coming on. Thank you, everyone who are watching, listening to this in the future. And yeah, we'll see you on the internet.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'll see you in a few weeks.